So I will not give much details on the proof of the last theorem I wrote, but I want to explain some of the tools, at least to give some idea. So recall that we want to study ramified algebraic groups. So from now on, G on smooth gradient. Two category of groups. So, and we want to prove something. So I stated a theorem which characterizes the property of being strongly A1 invariant. We want to have a concrete hand on that property. So, what can we do with this? So the idea is, tool is to use a truncated version of the Gerson complex. So the Gerson complex is a priori for usual sheaves like K theory and so on, an infinite, well, or maybe not infinite, but even a fixed for a smooth variety, it's a long complex which becomes exact for at least conjecturally for local smooth schemes and so on. In that case, when we deal with just sheaves of groups a priori not commutative, this complex will be very small. But actually, it will be sufficient to use the same kind of techniques with some care. So I just want to explain this because there are some very nice stuff. So we fix such a sheaf, and how do we construct this Gerson complex? So remember that by definition, so for X irreducible, where is the E? Yeah, with function field F, so we know that this is the property of being unramified. The sections of that sheaf over X injects in the section over the function field, which is a stock at the generic point, which is the beginning of the Gerson complex. Now, the property of being unramified, I will write some sequence here. Remember that the property is that G of X is inside G of F, the intersection over all points of codimension 1 of the sections over the local ring at those points. So, but now G was assumed to be a sheaf of groups, so clearly these are also groups. Stock of a group, of a sheaf of group is a group. So these are subgroups in G of F. So one trick to construct the Gerson complex is to, well, to set what it is, to consider the quotient. So we set H1, so this will be the H1 with support in Y, for each point of dimension 1, of X coefficient in G. So this will be, at the end, indeed, relative H1, the Nisnevich topology, but for the moment, it's just a definition, it's just a quotient of that group, the right quotient by this group. And in general, this is just a pointed set. So, one of the property, and of course, there is a canonical map from G. Well, in fact, it's better. So if you look at two objects, so this is a quotient of that group. So it's better than just a map. It's an action. So I will write a double arrow. This means an action, left action. So this is a pointed set. There is a canonical left action, and the fixed point, the other two, this subgroup is exactly the G of the local ring as isotropy subgroup. Okay, so this will be the replacement for the valuation. In general, if G is the sheaf of abelian groups like Milnor K theory and so on, what you have here is some Milnor K theory groups, and you have here the residue map. Okay, which goes to the Milnor K theory of the residue field. So this will play that role. And of course, it's not. Now it's just a pointed set. So we can go further in the Gaussian complex, and we consider the action of G of S over each of these pointed sets together. Okay, and the observation is that this action, so theory is on the product of all points per dimension one. But in fact, one of the axioms I gave is that for a given object, an element here, it lies in all these subsets. Sorry, the other logarithm, but maybe finitely many. And this has as consequence the fact that the action, in fact, preserves a weak product. Weak product meaning of a weak product of pointed sets means a subset in the product consisting of families which are the base points except for finitely many index. Okay? So there is a canonical left action of that on that set, pointed set. Now, we'll see that we can go further because this is not enough. In some sense, so we want to be able to understand the H1. So in the usual Gaussian complex, the H1, so this is a complex in degree 0, if you want. This is a complex in degree 1. This is the first boundary map, and the kernel is the group of sections. So this is okay. This property here tells you that the isotropy subgroup of the base point here through this left action is exactly G of X. Okay, this is the isotropy subgroup of the base point of that set. Okay. But now to compute the H1, we should have in hand another differential and say, well, the H1 would be the kernel of the differential through the action, divided by the action point. So we need something else. It's not enough to understand the H1. And actually, we can. Despite the fact that there is no H2 of smooth variety, well, no simple H2 of the scheme with value in the group, there is something that very natural that is put on the right, and here it is. So one of the property, the usual property of this kind of complexes, is to be exact, on regular local schemes. So smooth local schemes over K. So which means in concrete terms, I take the point in X and I localize that scheme at that point. I look at the associated complex, it should be exact in some sense. So, if we apply this principle, if G is a point of codimension 2 in a smooth scheme over K, what is the meaning of the Gaussian complex? So, of the local scheme associated to X and Z at Z. So this is a smooth local scheme of dimension 2 with one close point. Yeah. What should be the Gaussian complex? If you look through, there should be only a complex with of length 2, because there are no points of codimension bigger than 2. And in fact, to be exact, would mean that that stuff here at degree 2 that we do not understand should be the quotient. So if this were a complex of abelian groups, in the case of a local scheme of dimension 2, the term, the Gaussian complex in degree 2, is exactly the quotient of the first differential. Okay. So as a consequence, so this principle leads to the following definition. We said H2 with support in Z of X quotient in G. This will be just the quotient, the orbit set of that point set through this action, but that point set for the local that local scheme. So this will be the weak product over all point of collection 1 in 1 which contains Z. The point of collection 1 which go through Z, the fixed point. So Z is a fixed point of collection 2 of this subset, of this set. And that time, modulo on the left, the action of the function field. Okay? And the statement that the complex should be exact in for local smooth scheme of dimension 2 is just that definition. The consequence is this action here. Product of all point of collection 1 going through Z, H1, Y, X, G. And then this is a map, just a map of pointed sets, but equivalent map. This is subjective. So what is the, so this complex is exact. Yeah, for each point of collection 2. This is subjective map. And in fact, this induces an isomorphism between the orbit space of that set to this one. So it's an equivalent map and so on. So now we can go further. We know how to define this guy for any point of collection 2. Then we can collect together for X general irreducible with function field F. We can define the following Gaussian complex. Come back to a general X, take the weak product of all points of dimension 1, H1, Y, X, G, and then I consider the map, the product of all points of dimension 2, H2, Z, X, G. And in fact, one of the axioms I didn't write last time concerning this kind of field. So I told you that is a theorem. It's characterized and ramified field groups which are strongly A1 invariant. And among the axioms, I didn't find out any way to prove this. So I don't know if it is true automatically or not to prove that this, in fact, has its image in the weak product. So this is part of the axiom. That's what you find here. And this is just one axiom concerning one assumption in the theorem. Okay, so everything is completely elementary to define, except that here, it's not here. Okay?
Is it helpful to establish that in the context of Koenig spectroscopy?
I mean, it comes, yeah, for the moment I don't use it. I mean, from which, but this is the way we prove it. In the case of a space, you just use this spectral sequence, in that case it gives you exactly this. So in that case, it will be true. Okay, for the pi 1, for G equal to the pi 1 of a space, of any one local space, it will be true. Okay, but in general, if I take G unramified, I mean, this is not clear. Okay, so I just put it in the axiom. But this will be satisfied in all the cases. Yeah, but right now, G is not supposed to be strongly A1 invariant. Okay, if it is, it is a consequence. But I want to characterize strongly, and so I have to put this. Okay, I don't see, I mean, it's not, it doesn't seem to be a consequence. See what I mean? But it will be true for the object we study. So the main theorem, in fact, which proves the theorem I wrote last time, is basically, well, I told you basically the fact that, so except with some axioms, and in fact there are some other axioms, so maybe I should, I will not put the axioms. So there are other axioms to put in the game. And I basically stated the fact that so G and ramified shift of groups is strongly A1 invariant, which is an only if. So it satisfies the A1 invariant, but in low dimension. So A1 U G for I, of course, less or equal to 1, and U local dimension, so smooth local dimension 0 or 1. So it means U a field, or U a discrete, the local ring of a discrete variation ring. So in fact, this, so plus epsilon axioms. So among this one and some others, which are also satisfied in the case coming from spaces. For instance, one of these axioms means that this guy here is, in some sense, only depends on the residue field of Y. So it means if you have an etal covering of X, an etal morphism from Y to capital Y to X, which is a neighborhood of Y in the Nisnevich topology, then you can compute this set in both smooth schemes, and in fact they are the same. The canonical map is the same, so for instance, and so on. So you have this kind of and some concerning the H2 also. Okay? So basically this. And this, I mean, this assumption is very small. For U, the spectrum of a field, for instance, this is trivial, I mean, for I equal 1. So it only means that any G torso over A1 of the field is trivial. Okay? Because in degree 0, well, this is also means that the section of A1 over the field is equal, is constant. For U, discrete variation rings, slightly more, but it's not a big deal. And in some sense, so the next step will be to observe that for G equal to the pi 1 of a space, these are in some sense easy to check. Plus, because I assume this, that G is unramified, and this will follow from Gabel's lemma again, okay, by studying the Kunivo filtration. Okay, it will be that. So I just want to explain so just one technical point which explains this equivalence. So this equivalence in general, in some sense, if you, so idea of the proof. Idea of the proof. To use the Gershon complex. Imagine that, so if we knew that for all points in all smooth scheme, the Gershon complex, or maybe I could give a name, the complex of X with coefficients of G, that this complex for any localization of any smooth scheme at some point is exact. So exact meaning in the naive sense, which means, so this is a map of pointed sets, where is it? Over there. It's a map of pointed sets, so you can take, so of course on the right it's not exact, it's not subjective. Because if G is abelian, in fact, there will be a sequence. Okay? It is only subjective for X of dimension 2. Okay? So, but it's a map between pointed sets, so we can consider the kernel. Okay? The set of one set of elements from the weak product codimension 1, which map to 0, to the trivial one. Okay? And so the H1 of such a complex would be the orbit space of that kernel modulo the action of G of F. So this is the H1. And the claim is that if we know that this is exact for any local smooth local scheme, then the Gershon complex, which we know computes the section on X as the kernel of the first differential, computes also the H1. So in fact, a priori it is the H1 in the Zariski topology. And following the axiom, it's also, from what I told you, it also has a consequence, the H1 in the Nisnevich topology, and which proves the extra property that this comparison map is an isomorphism. Okay? So the main point is this. Can we prove this? In fact, if you, so inspired by the Ross paper and some other paper by Collio, Hubler, Kahn, I realized that basically if you know this, following the action there, you can prove the A1 invariant for the H1. Okay, so it's because you have enough maps. So in Ross paper, for instance, the A1 invariant of H1 of the cohomology groups is quite formal. If you have all the axioms, you have an explicit way to prove it. Okay, so in some sense, you can do the same thing. So if you know this, you know this, and you can prove the A1 invariant of the H1 because you have a concrete way to compute the H1. So this is the main point. So I just want you, I want to explain how you can go from that assumption, which proves A1 invariant in very small dimension, to the exactness of the Gerson complex. So this is done by induction. So it's true for local scheme of dimension less or equal to 1. I will prove that this implies the exactness for any, so which is already known for dimension 2. But what I want to prove is that if you assume this property here is true for local scheme of dimension D, the A1 invariance, then it implies the exactness of the Gerson complex in dimension D plus 1. And now you apply the technique to deduce A1 invariance for schemes of dimension 1, and so on. And this proves by induction. I just want to prove the following fact. So fact, if HI in the Nisnevich topology of U G to HI A1 over U G is bijection for I less or equal to 1 and any local smooth U of dimension less or equal to D, then Gerson complex is exact for Z of codimension, sorry, for X point of codimension D plus 1. So we win one more dimension. And then when you know this, the exact, you can compute the H1, and then you can go further in the A1 homotopy invariant. And then by induction, you prove everything. So this is the main idea. So I just want to explain this. It's very simple, the idea. And this uses Gabler lemma for the first time in a very explicit way. This will be basically the only technicality I will explain, but very simple and concrete. Proof of that fact. So proof. So we take X point of codimension D plus 1, and we want to prove the exactness of the Gerson complex of the following form, G of X localized at X, G of F, that acts on the weak product point of codimension 1 in X localized at X, H1 mapping to the weak product H2 the point of codimension 2 in the local scheme here. So we want to prove this is exact. So here it is clear, it's already known. So the point is to check that some guy here in the kernel, so an element here which maps to the trivial point here, is in the orbit. This is what we have to do. So let alpha be a cocycle, which means an element here which maps to the trivial point. Okay? So what can we do? So we have to. So the problem is that. So what is it concretely? Alpha. It is an element in the weak product here. So it means that there's a support. So let y1, y r, the finite in any point of dimension 1, which appears in the weak product, where alpha is non-trivial. Okay, so it is trivial except for finitely many. I pick up these finitely many y's. Now, I consider the closure and the union of all these guys inside x. So we have that situation here, and x is a point somewhere. Now, by Gadamer lemma, it's exactly the situation. You have a closed subscheme in a scheme x and finitely many points in x, but they are independent. So a closed subset here, closed subscheme, and here finitely many points. So it's something considering the semi-localization of x at those points. Then there exists an étale morphism from x to the affine line over a scheme V. So in some sense, we will only use this assumption, but in fact, moreover, V can be chosen as an open subset in some affine space of dimension. So X, yeah, some affine space. In fact, this is an open subset in an affine space. So étale such that the composition, so, sorry, there exists an open, yeah, I'm wrong, sorry. There exists an open subset omega in X. Of course, this cannot be reached each time, which contains X here, an étale morphism here. So this is étale, and so this will be noted by Y, capital Y. And if you look at the intersection of Y and omega, so this is a closed subscheme here. The composition here is still a closed immersion. Okay, and this is a very strong in fact, moreover, you may also assume that the composition of this to V is in fact a finite morphism. I will not use it right now, so but this is used later. So this is, it is a very, so it's called the geometric presentation lemma of Gadamer. It's a very concrete way, and the points to define the map from an open subset neighborhood of the point to A1. And here we have to assume that K is infinite. This is the reason why. In fact, I heard that Gadamer also proved this in the finite case. I just heard this, so it would simplify my work, because I have to reduce the case of finite field by expanding to function field and so on, but it seems to be also true, but I never saw the proof. So we have this situation here, and the point is that now, so this étale morphism, so we can restrict because we localize at x, so clear. The localization at x is equal to the location of omega at x. Okay, first. So the complex doesn't change if we consider this. And then we consider the map to A1 over V. It is an étale morphism. Now this étale, so it induces, it's an easy case, a morphism from the Gaussian complex of that smooth scheme to the Gaussian complex of the local scheme here. So we can write down here the Gaussian complex of A1 over V. So weak product over A1, V, dimension 1, H1, Y, and so on. So I do not write everything, and it commutes to everything. There is an obvious commutative square, G of E of X, or T. So T is the function field of V, and so on. So remember, we pick up some element here, which map to the trivial point here. Now, the point is that here, we know that all the, the point, the generic point of Y here, are also points there, with the same residue field. So in fact, this is a Nisnevich neighborhood of all these points Yi, but that we can see here. So here, it means that you have finitely many points here, with the same residue field as the Yi here. So it means that on that part here, as I told you, this is one of the axiom, this set map to this one through a bijection. It is the same thing, because it is one of the axioms. So in fact, this alpha comes exactly from an element which is here. It is in fact almost the same. So you just consider the same element. Now you have to prove that it is a cycle here, that it maps to the trivial point here. And this is the last axiom I didn't write, which tells you that through such a situation here, étale morphism, the map here will be will have trivial kernel. So this is again, this has the same kind of property. This map will have trivial kernel. So in fact, because of the assumption here, this element, this explicit element, is also mapped to the trivial point. And then we use the A1 invariant for V, which is of dimension strictly less than the dimension of X, codimension here. Okay. So we know that we have homotopy invariance for V. So this complex here is exact. So alpha comes from an action of an element here to the base point here, and then by commutativity you get the result. Okay. So in fact, it's more precise. You say that any element with this property, is the image of the base point here through the action of a function field of this form here. Nothing to this group here. Okay. I don't know exactly the meaning of that. So I wanted to give this. So it's a little bit technical, but it's something very concrete and very simple proof. And then the proof can be done by induction. We will see again probably the Gadow's lemma later on. It is used basically in this work twice. We write down a corollary for that, so we found a. Maybe I will write it later. No, it's okay. So, now the next step, so we have a good understanding of a ramified sheaf of groups which are strongly A1 invariant. It's a very concrete, list of axioms. And I told you the right hand side. This part of the axiom here will be quite easy to check for the pi 1 of a space. So now still need one more technical stuff. This is the construction of explicit sheaves of Minervit K theory. So using this theorem, construction of unramified K-theory. So what is the exact aim of this part? So here we give a general characterization of sheaves of groups with some property of A1 invariant. And in fact, we want to understand the following situation. Take n an integer greater or equal to 1, and we consider the sheaf of sets, so GN, the multiplicative group, which is a pointed sheaf of sets, smash n times by itself. So this is a smash product as in topology, so the quotient of the product sheaf by the union of diagonals, of wedges, big wedges, and assume that there is a pointed morphism to M, which is a strongly A1 invariant sheaf of Abelian groups. So it is a strongly A1 invariant sheaf in that sense, so we only have this small Gaussian complex, but I assume it to be Abelian. What I will state is not true if you assume, if you relax this and you consider strongly A1 invariant sheaf of groups. It's not true for n equal 1, for instance. The universal object to which it GN maps is non-Abelian. Okay? It is the pi 1 of p 1, which maybe I will talk at the end of the lectures, and it is a non-Abelian sheaf of groups. So, the simplest case is to assume that n is Abelian. So we assume that there is a natural transformation of sheaves of pointed set, which maps the pointed set to the pointed set, the point of that sheaf here. This is strongly A1 invariant, and we want to understand the universal one. So we want to construct these sheaves here, which will be denoted this way, and ramified Minervit K-theory in weight n. This is the same n. There is an obvious symbol map, which takes n units on a scheme to its associated symbol here, and we want to prove that there is a unique morphism of sheaves. And this will be a strongly A1 invariant sheaf of Abelian groups. So we want to understand the universal strongly A1 invariant sheaf of Abelian groups, which start from that guy. And this is, in some sense, I told you, so GM is a kind of zero-dimensional sphere. So it's the beginning of the Jurjevich theorem. In topology, the Jurjevich theorem allows you to compute the homology or the first non-trivial homotopy group of the spheres. So through the Jurjevich theorem, you end up by understanding H0, the reduced H0 of the zero-dimensional sphere with Z coefficient. And of course, you know this is Z. In some sense here, we will end up with this problem, but the problem is that there are many zero-dimensional spheres, and they are twisted versions, and this is a twisted version of a zero-dimensional sphere. This is a discrete object. It is a sphere, it is a discrete object, and it has a, is of cohomological dimension zero. Its cohomology with value in any strongly Riemann-Riemann shift is trivial. So it is the analog of the situation of computing H0, and the reduced H0 of a zero-dimensional sphere in a twisted version. Okay, so I first give a definition of such a shift, and it will be clear more or less by construction that this is a universal one. The problem is that I will have to use this abstract theorem to check that to first problem is to define a shift. It will be unramified, clearly, but to check that it is A1 invariant, and for this I will use this. Okay. So, first, to define an unramified shift, as we know now, we first have to define it on fields, and then to be able to understand residue morphisms. So in this form, that definition was found in collaboration with Mike Hopkins. It's a very simple definition and very natural. So let F be a commutative field. Then we define Smirnovich K-theory ring. So this is a graded ring, Z graded ring. I insist, Z graded. So it's a quotient, so it is defined by generators and relations. So it is a tensor algebra, the free associative graded algebra on the following set of generators. And I insist here, it is these guys here are really sets. I do not consider the unit, the group of units as a group. I just pick one generator for each unit, so as a set. Okay? So the tensor algebra over Z, the free associative algebra on the following list of generators. So one generator eta in degree minus one, and one generator which is indeed like that in degree two, in degree one, sorry, plus one, for any unit. Modulo four relations. So two-sided ideal generated by four relations. So the first relation, the Steinberg relation, U times one minus U is zero. If U is a unit different from one. So the Steinberg relation has an A1 homotopy interpretation, which was given by Po U and Igor Krish, which is very simple, and which explains why it is everywhere. It's a completely universal relation. There's no way to avoid it. Instead, I mean, if you are working with cohomology theory with satisfied homotopy invariants, then this relation is there, always. The second relation is the Fanny relation. So I insisted here that these objects here, it's just a set, it's not considered a subgroup. And in fact, this symbol is not additive. So if you take two units, UV, the symbol assigned to the product UV is equal to the symbol U plus the symbol V. So you observe that this is in degree one, plus a difference, plus a correction term, eta times U times V. So this is of degree one, so two, and minus one, so it is in degree one. Okay, so the eta is there exactly to correct the defect of additivity, And 3, eta is central. So for any unit, you have this. And the fourth relation, which I will explain in some different way, it's a little bit strange. So the plus the eta square times the symbol minus 1, again, this is in degree 1, plus the degree minus 1, 2 times eta is 0. So there are several. So all these relations are clear. This one is sounds a little bit funny, strange, but I do explain it now. First, the eta, which is here, is really coming from the Hopf map. Eta, coming from topology. And if you think about that, there are some relations. I mean, eta satisfies some relations in homotopy theory. So I told you at the beginning, each time you want to prove something, some formula or something like that, concerning a universal object, so the Hopf map eta, well, connect this with the Hopf map, the algebraic one, a to minus 0 to t1. So this is defined over spec z. So if you want to have such a universal formula, it should be compatible with the topology of the complex point and the topology of the real point. Okay? And in some sense, this relation is the only one, is the only algebraic relation which is satisfied by this Hopf map through complex point and through real point. So what do I mean? So through the complex point, so if you evaluate this on C, this is actually the usual Hopf map from S3 to S2. And the relation is satisfied is that 2 times eta, so it is stable relation, it is in homology, because I'm working in homology. Okay? The fact that I assume that everything is abelian, so it's not true for the map from S3 to S2, but stably, 2 times eta is 0. If you look to complex point, minus 1 is a square, and this term becomes 0. So this term doesn't fit. Now, if you look through real points, now it's more subtle, because this is mapped to minus 1. The symbol minus 1 is mapped to minus 1, and eta, this map, to real points, so it is mapped to a continuous map from R2 minus 0 to P1 of R, which is S1 to S1, it is a degree 2 map. So it is multiplication by 2. And this is the relation 2 square times minus 1 is 2 times 2. Okay, so in some sense, there is no other algebraic relation fitting. Another way is as follows, which is, so 4 is equivalent to 4 prime. I just write it this way. So eta times h is 0, where, so it is just a change of notations, h is eta minus 1 plus 2, which I write as eta minus 1 plus 1 plus 1, and I give the following definition for any unit. So there are two brackets, straight bracket here and this bracket here, and this is a symbol in dimension 0, and this is eta times the symbol u plus 1. And here is K0, mean of it. Okay? So in that, with that notation, this object is just the class of minus 1 plus 1. And this is called the hyperbolic plane. In fact, this is a ring, it's a commutative ring, in fact. This is isomorphic to the Grothendieck Witt ring of symmetric non-degenerate bilinear forms on F in any characteristic. And through this isomorphism, this is sent to the symmetric bilinear form of rank 1, given by u times xy, where x and y are the coordinates. Okay? So this is a usual presentation of that group here. So this is really the hyperbolic plane. So that relation is also interpreted as eta times h is 0. And another way to, which is the way we prove that this relation is true in our universal example, is that, well, if we write epsilon b minus times minus 1, then, so see the notation, then the relation is equivalent to eta times epsilon equal eta. I will explain because so this epsilon, so it's a unit in dimension zero, and it corresponds to the twisting map from GM smash GM to itself. If you permit the two factors, you get an automorphism in the multiple category, which is square is the identity, and in fact it is equal to this one. And again, the reason is that some complex embedding, so GM is not to S1, so it is minus 1 because this is a square over the complex numbers, and over the real it is plus 1 because GM is not to S0. Okay? So it's, and this is quite easy to prove in this way. So it is a very natural relation. Okay, although it's not clear from the definition. Can play. So a lot of you can go through Milner's paper because the definition is quite similar, and you can prove some properties or remarks. The Milner's K theory of fields is epsilon graded commutative, so which means that A times B is epsilon times degree of A times degree of B times A. Okay. Remarks. Obvious remarks, which goes through the computation. So some to give you some ideas on that ring here. So if we kill eta, so we kill the ideal generated by eta. If you go to the presentation here, tensor algebra over S star. So eta is killed. Then you have the Schoenberg relation, and this only tells you that the symbol is now additive. And all these are zero relations. So it means that this is the Milner K theory. Because it tells you that the symbol is, in fact, modulo eta additive. So this is Milner K theory. And geometrically, it will correspond in the A1 multiple category to the fact that the H1 of the cone of the off map is really Milner K theory. It's related to Milner K theory. But if you do not take the cone of eta, you have this more complicated stuff. What is also easy? So I told you that in degree zero, it is a Grothendieck ring. Now, if you multiply by eta, okay, minus 1. The relation 4 kills H. So if you start from that and you multiply by eta, certainly in that module here, H will be mapped to 0. Okay, so it factors through the V-tring. V-tring is just the quotient of that ring by H equals 0. And this is an isomorphism. Not hard to check, and in fact, multiplication by eta in negative degree gives you isomorphism. So it sounds to be complicated in negative degree, but it's quite simple. Milner's K theory in negative degree is just the V-tring of F. And this tells you that, so if you kill eta, you get Milner's K theory. If you invert eta, the consequence, you get just the Laurent polynomial with quotient in the V-tring in eta. Okay? Yeah. I mean, Milner's K theory is the analog for Hermitian K theory. Yeah, for a field, yeah. It plays exactly the role played by Milner K theory for Quillen K theory. That's a question. I mean, it's something. So there is a twist. So you have to consider bi-graded version of Hermitian K theory because the problem is that the K theory of GM smash something is easy to to understand that the emission case of GM smash something is not so easy, because you have only some more complicated periodicity. Okay, but yeah, it's what I said. I mean, it's a bi-graded version. You need to use two indices. Okay? But I know that for fields, the mean of it, K2 mapping to the corresponding group in emission K-theory, this is an isomorph field. So the same thing as for Quillen K-theory, the K2 mean norm of field is the same as the Quillen case. Okay? So this is, in that sense, the analog. So just a remark, still a more subtle remark. So we consider you have this relation, which is a nice relation, eta times h equals zero. Here we kill eta and we get Milner K theory. And here we invert eta, but it's not quite a more subtle thing to do. You can just kill H. And by analogy, this is to be defined as what I call the Vitt K-theory. And it's not hard to check that there is a canonical map, so from Milner Vitt K-theory to the direct sum of the power of the fundamental ideal of F. So I of F is the fundamental ideal. In W of F, you take all its powers over the integers. And of course, for N negative, this is just the Vitt ring. The negative power of an ideal is just the ring itself. Okay? So in negative degree, this ring is just the Vitt ring. And in positive degree, it is the power of the fundamental ideal. Then the Pfister symbol induces a map that way, which is easy seem to be surjective. And in fact, this morphism is always an isomorphism. But this is very hard to prove. It uses a bunch of non-trivial theorem, because if you know this, you can prove, I mean, you can deduce the Milner case, Milner conjecture on quadratic forms from that. If you kill eta, yeah. So eta is not killed here. So you have killed H. If you assume that you have this, then modulo eta. So eta is eta, the class here, but through this map, eta corresponds to the inclusions. Let's division by eta, just put this power to the previous one. Okay? So if you kill eta, you are just on that side. So this is Vitt K-theory modulo eta, but it's commutative. I mean, you can just kill, so it's the Milner Vitt K-theory in which you kill eta and h. But you can start by killing eta and then killing h. So if you kill eta, this is Milner K-theory, and h is now multiplied by 2. So this is not nothing but mod 2 Milner K-theory. And this quotient here, so the power of the fundamental ideal modulo eta, I told you this is just inclusion. It just means you take the direct sum of all the quotients. So this is direct sum of IN modulo IN plus 1. Okay? So in some sense, it is rather the other way. You have to assume Voivodsky's result to deduce this. It cannot be trivial. Okay? But it's a natural definition. Okay? This is a definition. We won't use this here. So now we can state something. Just need to define one more thing, which is well known. So let's now be the discrete evaluation on F, and let psi be a uniformizing element. Okay. Then there exists a unique morphism like this, a natural residue map from the Milnor-Witt K theory to the Milnor-Witt K theory, degree lowered by 1 of the residue field of the valuation with the same property, but the problem here is that it really depends on the choice of pi. In Milnor K theory, it doesn't. Okay? And it maps so that where the I are units to, so it's the same formula to the reduction here. Absolutely the same formula. And in fact, what you can prove, so if you change pi, if you take another one, then it is u times pi. Okay, another uniformizing element will be a unit times pi. So the residue morphism associated to u times pi is in fact, I'm not really sure, but something like the obvious formula. So it corresponds to twisting using the model structure of the K0 by the multiplication by this unit. So this is a unit in K0, and so in some sense it's not unique, it depends on pi, but if you change pi, you just multiply here by a unit. As a consequence, the kernel is completely independent, and the kernel is denoted by kernel of the residue is denoted by Milnor-Witt K theory of the local ring, which is perfectly well defined. And the theorem is that this, all this data, so I will stop here, or I have still some time, 2 minutes. So this is perfectly independent of the choice of pi. Okay, because if you change pi, you change its morphism to morphism by a unit, so the kernel is pretty the same. And you have also, so this data, remember to construct a nullified sheaf, you need section and field, functor in F, okay. Need a subset assigned to any discrete valuation ring, and you need, if this is separable, okay, you need a restriction map. Well, I don't need it for the moment. SV. And you take SV, which is a formula which is in Rost or in Milnor and so on. It's just a residue, so you choose any pi, and the formula will be independent of pi cup. So SV evaluated on something is the residue at pi of pi cup, the same guy here. Okay, and this is independent of the choice of pi. And this form, I don't remember, unified data. So may define an unified sheaf for any n of Milnor-Witt K3. And unified sheaves of Abelian groups. So there is a little technical point. I told you to check the last axiom, A4. I told you it's very difficult. And here again, to check this, everything is more or less clear, except the last axiom. And for this, I need again Gabber. So for A4, Gabber's enough. So, but Gabber's lemma is only available a priori on infinite field, but this axiom is related to checking that two morphisms are equal in some sense. So, but if you can prove this for infinite field, you deduce it for finite field, because you want to prove something defined. Finite field is equal, but you can extend this to a function field. It's commutative and it injects. So if they are equal over infinite field, it's okay. So you can prove it over any field, in fact. And one may also prove using the abstract theorem that this is also strongly A1 invariant, and I will stop there. and basically to check the property of A1 invariance. So we have more or less, by definition, we understand the Gerson complex for this. So beware that, here's the point. In my notations, the quotient of that is denoted because the quotient here doesn't use any, it's a canonical object, it doesn't use any choice of pi. So it cannot be identified with the Milner-Witt K theory of the residue field. And it is denoted this way. And if you choose pi, then this becomes isomorphic to the Milner-Witt K theory of the residue field in lower degree, in a shifted degree. Okay? But the canonical notion is this one. And you can understand the Gerson complex and you can compute. And to check the last property concerning strongly A1 invariance over A1 of U for U of dimension less or equal to 1, you need some A1 invariance property. You need to compute this exact sequence. Well, maybe to be decent, I should draw it there. I finish with only need this. To prove these axioms, you have to prove the following. So, take the Milner-Witt K theory of the field F, you inject it to the Milner-Witt K theory of the function field in one variable, X. So, this is the function field of the affine line over F. So, I'm trying to prove something concerning the Gerson complex of A1 over a field. Okay? So we need to prove something. And you end up with understanding the following complex. So now you write the Gerson complex, point of conformation 1 in the affine line over F, but this is well known, it's a unitary polynomial, irreducible. And now this gives you a canonical pi. So here you can identify canonically the H1 with the Milner-Witt K theory of the residue field, because there is a canonical pi. It's unitary. So we have this. And you have to check that this is, in fact, a short exact sequence. And in fact, you have to go through Milner's paper, in his inventionist paper on a quadratic form and so on. He proved this sequence for Milner K theory, so it's quite tricky. And you filter this by symbol generated by a polynomial of fixed degree and so on. And you can just adapt the technique. So observe that. So this is a bit more tricky because in negative degree, so you prove both at the same time, it gives you the analog sequence for Witt groups. It gives you the Witt group of F inject into the Witt group of the function field and the quotient is sum of Witt group of the residue field and so on. Okay? So it's a little bit more subtle, but basically it is along the same idea. So compare Milner's paper. And this allows one to prove this property. And I stop. Okay. Thank you. It's always, in fact, to be more concrete, it's always the fiber product of IN of S cross Milner KN modulo small IN, so IN modulo IN plus 1. Always true. But for N bigger or equal to 2, it's non-trivial. It's related to the Milner conjecture. But for N less or equal to 2, it's elementary. So it's very easy. So K1 is I of F cross K1, so the unit, the fiber product over unit modulo squared. So the fiber product. And in fact, the Grothendieck Witt ring, K0, so this is true everywhere, is also the fiber product of the Witt ring of the integers over Z modulo 2. The formula is always true. Okay? So, but we only use it at the beginning. I proved this first, but it's more complicated. It uses Voivodsky stuff and so on. So I don't need that, only in low degree. And in low degree, it's just elementary. And again, this formula is very much reminiscent for this intuition that always think about complex topology and real topology. So the Milner K theory is related to the complex topology, motive, and so on, and the power of the fundamental ideal refers to real topology. some sense.